Russell Westbrook fires his agent and huddles up with his teammates. Where's his future headed? Could it even be the Knicks? Plus Donovan Mitchell, is he a lock for the Knicks? A lot of Knicks talk today, and James Harden takes less money to stay with his team, puts it all on the record. We got a lot to talk about on today's Locked On NBA.
You are Locked On NBA, your daily NBA podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Welcome into Locked On NBA. Summer League is over, but the NBA is still running wild. Tons of headlines coming out this weekend. Russell Westbrook fires his agent and is in the headlines as Chris Haynes says the Lakers are all meeting up and huddling over the phone to get on the same page. Anthony Davis involved, LeBron James involved, and Per Mark Stein. The Knicks involved. Wow, Russell Westbrook cannot stay out of the headlines these days. Plus James Harden taking less money to help his team. And Donovan Mitchell, he's always in these headlines with the Knicks and the Heat. Is anyone else an option? Does anyone else make sense? We'll get to it all today on Locked On NBA, but we got to start with Russell Westbrook. Where should we go first with this, David? I think the biggest Russell Westbrook story from the weekend is that he fired his agent, who then put out some comments about it on ESPN. But what do you think is the biggest Russell Westbrook angle from the weekend?
Well, I think it's a piece just released like minutes before we started recording. Luckily, Chris Haynes of Yahoo finding out about this incredible huddle conversation that took place by the phone in the opening weekend of Las Vegas Summer League, where LeBron, Russell Westbrook, and AD all got together by phone and hashed out all their differences and are clearly all on the same page. And yet, at the starting of the second paragraph, Chris Haynes writes in, "That doesn't mean that he's certainly going to be on the team," meaning Westbrook's future with the team isn't quite decided yet. So still on board to win a title, but also possibly still trading him anyway. Kind of hard to get both of those together. I'm not sure that they necessarily go as smoothly as this big three has. But I guess that we can start off with the agent here, because we're hearing conflicting information. Apparently, if the Lakers are putting out there through Haynes that everybody's on board and yet Westbrook is already going ahead and fired his agent, I think that's the bigger news right there.
Not only did he fire his agent, you know, Thad Foucher went on the record with ESPN saying they had irreconcilable differences about what his future could be, and even saying in a statement about the Lakers not wanting to give up extra assets to move on from Westbrook, that another team that acquired him would almost certainly buy him out, how that's bad for his reputation. Not only are these sort of not inflammatory necessarily statements from an ex-agent, but very telling about the Lakers' market for Westbrook, because they've been on the record, or at least through reports, saying we don't want to give up a first-round pick to get off this guy. We definitely don't want to give up an unprotected pick to get off this guy. I think it's sort of revealing that when your agent says, hey, that's what it's going to take, that's a big PR hit. That would be his fifth team in as many seasons. That's a big hit for your reputation, and that is certainly where his value is at, even if he has shared goals with his fellow stars after the huddle up via phone in Summer League. I still don't know how huddling up via phone works. It seems like his value is negative. And I agree with Russ's agent that those sort of transactions, those sort of thoughts hurt your reputation enough that it hurts your value, even if you end up getting the same amount of money in the short-term season. So certainly a damning split up with your agent right at a weird time in his career. And certainly fascinating to see an ex-agent go so public with comments like this about it, about their former client.
Yeah, no doubt. We keep talking about this. We've talked about it at various points. Matt and I have on occasion mentioned Westbrook when his name comes up in trade talks and things of that sort, or when the Lakers are falling apart. It's just, what does Russell Westbrook want at this point? Like, I mean, apparently, at least through Chris Haynes, he's huddling up and committing himself to a championship. But is that really the case? Doesn't he seem pretty clear that he wants to move on from this whole debacle in Los Angeles, that as much optimism as he espoused last offseason, now we've gone in the opposite direction where he's like, you know what? I don't want to be here anymore. I can't play along these two people. It's time for me to move on to other possibilities. And that's why he's firing his agent, because he couldn't get a deal done. I'm not exactly sure what the motivation is for Westbrook. Where is it that he's going to be happy at this point in his career? He clearly wants to get paid. He clearly wants to continue collecting on his paycheck. He's not at the same point that John Wall was, where he's, you know, willing to accept a buyout this past offseason, just a few weeks ago, And even then, John Wall not taking necessarily less money in order to get a better opportunity and some playing time. But again, he's like, I think Russell's a little bit more proud at this point. He can't give up on the idea that he's still an MVP type player. He's not quite like John Wall, and that John hasn't played a lot over the last few seasons. So I think Westbrook still envisions himself as a significant contributor, and he's just not getting the respect that he thinks he deserves in Los Angeles. Am I reading this wrong? Is there another way of looking at this situation?
No, I think you're exactly right that he still feels that he's a significant contributor and wants to get paid that way, but that sort of butts heads with the reality of who he is at this stage of his career, and that can be really hard for some players to admit, one, and reflex to as well, and perhaps that could be the reason for the splitting. This is totally conjecture. I am totally guessing, but if Russ thinks, hey, I'm still a dude, I can be the guy, I can lead to wins, and his agent said, well, based on the trade talks that you've been involved in, no, you can't. You need to reinvent yourself as a player. That could be a reason for a split. I'm not saying that that is the case, but you know, you never know with these sort of things what leads to it. But it seems like the player Westbrook is and the player he wants to be are at odds, and figuring that out is a big part of how he will continue forward. Now, I cannot remember who wrote this. I just saw this comparison like today, and I can't remember who it was from, and I just Googled it, and I still can't find it. But someone compared this to Allen Iverson late in his career, switching these teams, Philly, Detroit, Memphis. There was another team in there I can't remember, where he was also still trying to be the guy when he was past that point of his career. And that hurt his value and made it really hard for him to fight through that reputation and be on winning teams. Westbrook is sort of at that stage where it's kind of adapt or die. And when you split with your agent and when you have to have it come out that you are on the same page as your star teammates, it seems like you are at that point of, hey, you'll have to figure out how to succeed in a different role or you will be on bad teams because he isn't the guy he used to be anymore. I think it's that simple.
Yeah. I think Memphis was a team that Iverson was on too. But yeah, I mean, it's a good point. It was
Jovan Buha for the Lakers and the Athletic that wrote that.
Oh, right. Yeah. Yep. He wrote a lot about Westbrook today. And yeah, it's just, there's a lot of news here. Let's cut through it. Is there any way of salvaging this in Los Angeles? Like, I think a lot of that hinges on finding a willing trade partner. And as you've mentioned before we started recording, Mark Stein reporting that the Knicks might be an option, but that doesn't seem likely either.
Yeah, they just got Brunson. It seems like the reason they would get involved is if, you know, somehow that David has fallen away here. If they get Donovan Mitchell, maybe they would make that happen in a way that makes some sense for them to accumulate assets in a Julius Randle trade. But again, it seems like the subtext of what Mark Stein reported is not, hey, we want Russell Westbrook as the Knicks. It's, hey, we think we can get assets this way of getting off of Randle, since we know we now have our two ball dominant guys being guards in Brunson and Mitchell. We don't need Julius Randle anymore. He doesn't make sense on our team. Perhaps he can make more sense on the Lakers and we could get an asset. So it's really hard for me to think of a team that would allow him to be who he wants to be and be good. I mean, there are teams that could allow him to be who he wants, like OKC, not even OKC. They have Josh Giddey and Shea at this stage. I mean, the Spurs, I guess, like there's not many that would be good. You know, the Hornets reportedly had interest in him a while ago, but that was also in the subtext of, we would like to trade away Gordon Hayward and get stuff for him. So it's really hard to find good fits to me. I mean, it seems like everywhere where a trade makes sense, it only makes sense because of a cap rule or an asset accumulation or something like that, where similarly bad money goes to the Lakers. There's not many trade fits that seem to make sense for Russell Westbrook can be really good and stand out here.
Is he still a big name? Like, is there even any allure for like a middling franchise to bring in the name of Westbrook and say, well, he's still a star MVP type player, you know, a pseudo all-star, you know, maybe a few seasons ago, et cetera. Like, I just don't see it. Like, I mean, you're seeing a Spurs rookie talk about what he acquired, what he accumulates the most of. And I know it's somewhat jokingly, but yeah, I mean, like that's what he's associated with at this point. Maybe there's a lot of recency bias there, but Westbrook the player hasn't aged particularly well. And a lot of that is his own responsibility, and that he just can't seem to accept that his skills have diminished and that he's not willing to embrace a different, lesser role in order to complement the players on his team and to help them win. And I think that's a part of the problem, is that he's just no longer the player he is. And he's always come across as angry and aggressive. And that's part of what made him such a thrill to watch when he was at his peak in Oklahoma City, is that he was constantly attacking the rim with such fury, but they didn't win much then either. And now we're at a point where it's like, well, you're not winning at all. You're not, you know, you're not winning a lot, and you're not even the contributor you once were. So he has to be able to make some change. I just don't see any team, like, even, I mean, I'm just throwing it out there. The Kings are embracing a rebuild. They're finally moving in the right direction. At least you'd think so. I mean, Orlando, the Rockets, like, there's no team out there that could be like, oh no, we at least want the name attraction that Russell brings, because that name just does not have the same glimmer it once did attached to it.
Ironically, you know, we're only one season away from him guiding the Wizards to the playoffs, like, not single-handedly, but his late season surge playing a factor there. So I won't say he's like totally dead in the water in terms of like, can he do that again? Maybe he could do that again. You know, what's funny is the Wizards are kind of an interesting fit right now. Not that they could trade for him, but if he does get bought out, like, I mean, their starting point guard right now is like Monte Morris. You know, why not try that Russ Eller one more time? But yeah, there's not, you know, he's a year removed from that. And clearly it didn't go well with teams that have other ball dominant guys, and the Wizards have Bradley Beal. So yeah, there's not any that stand out to me just perusing through a list of teams in the league at this stage. So yeah, it'll either take an adjustment from him or an extremely sort of unique situation magically appearing that is not currently obvious.
Yeah. Well, let's move on, and we'll talk a little bit about Donovan Mitchell and what happens to him and his future. You're listening to Locked On NBA. But Tony, I think you've got something to mention to our listeners regarding a potential sponsor of our show.
I do, David. But first, I have to pull up what that sponsor is, because I am ill-prepared to be speaking on behalf of someone else. If you have those notes up, I think you should be the one to share that information.
Yeah, you're right. Sorry about that. That's on me. Built Bar is a sponsor of the show. It has been for a long time. And look, if you have tried their coconut brownie chunk bar, you're going to be so happy to hear. Now they've gotten the puff treatment. That means they've been infused with marshmallows, the same great taste, same great nutrients, everything that you're looking for in a protein bar, without any of the guilt associated with eating something like an indulgent treat. This is low calorie, low sugars, high in protein, high in nutrients, everything you might be looking for. Same great taste, 100% covered in chocolate. So you can try all their puff flavors. We talked about them for a while here on this show, but if you haven't tried them yet, this is your opportunity, because believe me, you won't be disappointed. My family loves them. Everybody I know, they're the perfect treat. You grab them on the go when you're looking for something to tide you in between meals, or let's say you've got a big meeting or something you've got to get to and you can't eat a full meal. This is the perfect snack for you. And again, none of the guilt, all of the nutrients you're looking for, and all of the great taste. So go to built.com right now. Use the promo code LOCK15 and you get 15% off your order. Use the promo code LOCK15 and you get 15% off your order of Built Bars, but only if you go to built.com.
Into Locked On NBA, where I am more prepared to talk about Donovan Mitchell than I was to talk about Built Bar moments ago. The thing about Donovan Mitchell in the trade chatter that's been interesting is, and I understand why it's this way, he's been connected to the Heat for a while. He's been connected to the Knicks for a while. And those two teams have dominated the headlines. That said, similar to Kevin Durant's trade request, where it seems like Toronto, it seems like, you know, the team getting the most chatter at this point after the Ayton stuff has settled down. There are hurdles with Miami trading for any star, and the Knicks have a history of this stuff not quite working out for them the way it always seems it should. And the Jazz can trade him to anywhere, whoever gives them the best offer. Are we overlooking other places? Is there too much Knicks chatter? Is there too much Heat chatter? So first of all, if you made me put my money on it, yes, I would pick one of those two teams. There's a reason they are long connected. There's a reason the NBA business works the way it does. But do you feel like there are any other teams who could sneak in here, David, or is it kind of fait accompli that it's going to be one of those two squads at the end of this?
I'd have to say that's the case. Like, I didn't even really know how strongly the Knicks' interest was in Mitchell, and we've been talking about this on our own show, Locked On Heat. regarding, you know, Miami's interest. And yeah, as you mentioned, a longtime interest, the connection to Dwayne Wade seems an obvious one, his connection to Bam Adebayo, the fact that I think he is, as a star level player, probably not the centerpiece for a winning, you know, for you to continue winning at a high level. I don't think that's necessarily a knock. You know, you just might not be a 1A type player. Alongside Bam Adebayo and Jimmy Butler, Mitchell's fit would be a lot better. So, you know, one of the things that we talked about and talking about Mitchell's fit in Miami was that it didn't seem like they were really bidding against anybody else, because it's not that Mitchell is a bad player, or, you know, he obviously has some glaring weaknesses in his game that can be improved, but I just don't see a lot of a market for him. Like, either you've got that play that you've got that position locked up, or you're not willing to sacrifice your youth, whatever picks you might have accumulated, whatever draft assets or whatever other assets you might have on your roster from any other suitors, to acquire a youngish type player that might not necessarily be the 1A that's going to carry to a championship. He's not that guy yet. And you don't have the kind of complementary type players where you could say acquiring Mitchell right now is going to propel us into a title window or, you know, contending status. I don't see it for the Knicks either. Like, you know, it's okay. The argument that my co-host Wes Goldberg has said is that, you know, they have to acquire star level talent, however they can get, in terms of the Knicks. But I just don't see that he's going to make them a title contender. Like, I don't know that they're necessarily a play-in tournament team. I don't know that they're better than the fifth seed, even if things break well. I don't see exactly what the market is for him. So to answer your question, I don't think that there are other suitors for Donovan Mitchell outside of New York and Miami. I think New York wants him because they want to get star-level players, and that's, as you pointed out, they've missed out on the past. For Miami, he can come in, facilitate and make plays and get that, be that secondary scorer to complement Jimmy Butler and Bam Adebayo that puts them in title contention or keeps them in title contention. And other than that, I just don't see other teams out there willing to make a trade for him.
Yeah, I think that in general, you are correct. Like, he's from New York. They have been bad enough besides 2020-21 that they have young guys who are good, even removing RJ Barrett. And they got a bunch of extra picks in the draft. They still have, I think, one left over from the Mavs when they traded Porzingis to them years ago. In theory, that is the package that the Jazz would want. I mean, that is, I don't know what Danny Ainge exactly wants, but that seems like the stuff they would want. Then right. He'd have two first they can trade. You got to correct me if that's incorrect. Two first they can trade, Tyler Hero, Duncan Robinson. They aren't bereft of young talent on that squad either. And yeah, the Dwayne Wade connection is there. The Bam connection is there. The Wade and Miami connection got Depot there eventually. It took a while, but it got him there eventually. You know, they have a history of getting guys who have that connection. Those two have made the most sense for all those reasons. But I still always want to think with this stuff, same with KD, you know, well, that only kind of matters. It does matter. Every team wants to be like, hey, superstars, look how good we are to you. Eventually, you can come here and have fun for a little bit. And then when you hate it, we'll get you where you want to go. I get that that matters. I understand that. I also think, and this is just, there's two teams that kind of stand out that I want to talk about, but one is Memphis. Like, Memphis for forever is like, hey, we have really good young players and a bajillion young pieces that are good because we're awesome at drafting and we have space right now to be interesting. Why not Memphis? You know, and I don't think Memphis is thinking about doing that. I think them rolling over their cap space till next year and drafting high and well again is a smart idea. But like, why aren't other teams kind of mentioned? It seems like if his value truly is, and I agree with you that he's not a 1A kind of guy, not at that super, super height, it seems like there's a couple teams that were kind of on the fringes that maybe should be. Like, does Dallas have enough if they push in all the chips? Like, some of these things seem like they should make sense to me, but I still, even though I think the Knicks and Heat are the two frontrunners, does that make sense or am I overcomplicating that?
No. I think you're spot on there. Yeah. I just, like, most of the teams that maybe are like, Phoenix, right? Like, let's say they miss out on the KD deal. And again, I don't even know what the logistics of this would include, but like, they don't need Mitchell. They've got Devin Booker there. Like, you look at the other teams that are like allegedly in that kind of status, you know, you look at Milwaukee or Philadelphia, it's like they've got that position locked up. So I just don't see this huge market for a player like Donovan Mitchell. And it just seems like this is a referendum on who he is as a player, but I don't think that's necessarily the case. And he's not the big name. He's not even, I think, as good a seamless fit as Kevin Durant. Like, KD, like he's like, you could put him on any team and that team is immediately going to get into at least playoff contention, if not, you know, title contention. Donovan Mitchell, I'm not that much of a believer in. I think you're overlooking, you know, kind of how much they've depended on Rudy Gobert over the last few seasons and how he was the linchpin of a really spectacular defense and things of that sort. And I'm curious to see how it all plays out. I think at this point, it seems almost like a done deal that he winds up in New York, unless something changes dramatically. Like, we're trying to sell hope for our listeners at Lockdown Heat, but the reality is that I just don't see it happening unless New York decides all of a sudden, no, we're done, we can't do this anymore. And then Danny Ainge says, yes, you know what? I really do like negotiating with Pat Riley. I'm going to see what I can do to get it done. I don't know.
Those two, are they huddling up on the phone? Is that what you're telling me about Danny Ainge and Pat Riley?
Yeah, they've been huddling up for years together, just trying to work out deals.
Similar to Memphis, like a young, good team, the Cavs, I thought about, especially with Sexton as a sign-and-trade piece, yeah, still like, whatever is going on with that, that's a whole nother topic. It's like, yeah, that, like, put him next to Garland and Mobley. All of a sudden, you got three studs under 25. Like, does that make sense? Could they sneak in there? Do they have a competitive offer? I mean, Okoro's on their team. They've got some other nice salaries on that squad. They have all their own picks, except for one, I think, from their Caris LeVert trade. Like, that makes some sense to me, too. That's why I was curious if this discussion should be, well, does anything make sense beyond the Knicks and Heat? But I think because of his status, those two teams have good enough offers and he wants to go there, that it probably won't end up being someone other than those two teams, even though there are other fits that make sense and could put together competitive packages.
Is Cleveland better by acquiring Donovan Mitchell? I mean, I don't even know what they'd have to give up.
That's a good question. That is a good question. I would say maybe. I mean, Caris LeVert had the ball a lot for them last year, and Caris LeVert was not good on the Cavs. Like, you put Donovan Mitchell in those situations, and they're better. Yeah, I'd say they're better, but not like a ton. I get what you're saying about the concerns.
Right. And look, you're looking at your young backcourt there. You're looking at your young frontcourt players. I mean, you're I think you're pretty set at this point. I think you like what you brought in there, and you don't necessarily want to bring in some guy who's going to overthrow Garland as the star player in your team and things of that sort. Like, that's a major risk there. I just don't see how they could justify that, especially after, you know, they had such good vibes throughout all of last season. They kind of overachieved. They exceeded expectations last year. And then all of a sudden you're going to just overturn things completely and disrupt things potentially by adding a guy like Donovan Mitchell. And it's not to say he's a locker room presence, like a negative one or anything like that, but, you know, he clearly wants to be the number one guy. And I'm just not sure that's the right situation for him. And in Memphis, you know, he's not going to be the number one guy because you've got a certain player there by the name of John Morant. So I just don't, I don't know where their fit is. I get it. Even in talking about it, like, I don't see what the Knicks' interest would be other than getting a guy who's a local name and things of that sort. And yes, another star name, but I don't know that they're going to get significantly better. They made their big move in the offseason already. That was to acquire Jalen Brunson. So it's going to be interesting to see how it plays out. I just think Utah is kind of done with the whole idea of having Mitchell, although we heard early on that they were going to build around him or have them, you know, be on that roster. It just never seemed like a realistic option, but I just don't know. As days go on here and we're entering this bleak part of the offseason, how much longer they can continue just keeping him here for no reason.
I hear that Jazz bluff, and then I see the rest of the guys on the team not named Donovan Mitchell. That's like maybe the 11th best team in the West right now. I can't take it seriously after what they've done so far the rest of the offseason. They weren't good enough last year to sell that to anyone, including me. Like, I can see that your second best player right now is Malik Beasley, Mike Conley at 35, Bojan at 33 or whatever their ages are. You know, I can't buy that. Let's talk about James Harden, who is not in trade talks. Can you believe it? We're going to talk about a guy who didn't get traded and still hasn't even signed a contract yet. We'll be right back to talk about James Harden. Thank you for making Locked On NBA your first listen today and every single day. For your second listen, look, if you want more on Donovan Mitchell, Locked On Heat is a place to go. Locked On Knicks is a place to go. Locked On Jazz is a place to go. David Locke, of course, the boss man, will be covering all of that over there. One more star to talk about today, because he still hasn't technically signed with his incumbent Philadelphia 76ers, and that's none other than James Harden, who tells Chris Haynes and others now that he is locked in with the Sixers, eager to get to work. I'm stunned. I thought he might not be locked in. That's obviously sarcasm. Those are the quotes you expect. The ones you don't expect is him saying that he is going out there and telling his team, this is how bad I want to win. get what you need, sign who we need, and give me whatever is left over. That, unlike just saying I'm locked in, actually is putting your money where your mouth is. And I think that's a pretty interesting stuff to do for James Harden. I think that's kind of cool from a team building perspective.
It's a kind of legacy redefining move for him. Like, I think the last couple of seasons has shown that as great a star, as big a name as he is, like, it's tough for him to be viewed as being anything but selfish. I think just because he took a lot of money, he forced his way out of Houston, he's forced his way out of Brooklyn, and then last year, just never quite the player that the Sixers hoped that he'd be, and he took over in spurts, but never really quite carried them to the promised land. The expectations there may be a little bit too high, but either way, he fell short of those, and now all of a sudden, we're hearing the opposite, right? Like, this is who just wants to win, and he's willing to take less money. I think it changes a lot of the perception about who Harden is, and maybe he recognized the writing on the wall and said, you know what, I need to do something a little differently. I need to be, I just want to be able to be, you know, committed to winning. I'm at a point in my career, I'm getting older. I'm not necessarily ever going to get any better at this point. Like, you can only hope for vintage Harden type performances on every once in a while, but this is Joel Embiid's team, not James Harden's team. So if he wants to go out into the sunset being remembered as an all-time great, and I still think that's a possibility. I still think that's realistic too. I think he needed to add something to his very complete resume, which is an NBA title. And if that's the way to do it, then this is the best opportunity for him, is to be able to secure that and build to his list of accomplishments there. So I don't know. I see what he's done there when taking less money, adding PJ Tucker, all the other offseason moves that they've made. It just seems like the Sixers are finally on the right page. You know, they moved on from Ben Simmons. That debacle seems like it took place an eternity ago. Are they the best team in the Eastern Conference now with James Harden recommitted to winning, huddling up with his teammates and getting back onto the same page?
Look, this is like every player in the offseason, if they do an interview, there will be that quote. Yeah, I'm locked in. I'm committed. I'm ready to get better and help the team. I'm like, duh. You know, that is the baseline expectation for fans of you. But going on the record of saying like, yeah, I'm taking a lot less money to help this team get better, that is taking it a step further. That is something different here. If only there was someone who we talked about in the first segment who could potentially take notes from such a string of ideas and help their team in the future. But anywho, yeah, I think that's a really big deal for him. I agree with what you say about what the title adds to his resume. And maybe the Sixers do get dinged for tampering with PJ Tucker, which it sounds like could be something that ends up happening. But, you know, what they struggled with in the postseason, like, I wouldn't say they scraped by Toronto, but it wasn't as easy as some people thought, even with Embiid and Harden. Embiid was hurt, so the Heat series is a little different to say, but like, they didn't push that one as far as they would have liked, and Harden wasn't enough to make it even kind of competitive when Embiid was out. You know, I think they realized, like, okay, we need more on this team. Daniel House will help them on the wings. You know, Tybal was only a one-way player. Danny Green is now hurt and not available for them this season. Like, they need more at that spot. And so being able to get House and PJ Tucker, which would have been unavailable with James Harden at his maximum salary this season, especially with hard cap concerns, you know, that is a big deal for them because that will make them better. That makes them deeper. That he's still going to be, I think, max contract eligible next year with the way the cap stuff works anyway. So it's not like crippling him in any way, but being able to take less to help this team get better, sign guys to long-term deals, that's a really big deal. And that's different than the standard star PR that they do in the offseason of, you know, like I joked about, oh, I'm locked in, I'm ready to get better. Okay, good. That is what everybody expects you to say. What are you doing about it? How are you doing it? And there are ways to do it by locking in and actually playing and getting better. But there's also this way of actually legitimately helping your team in a way that, you know, since the big three era in Miami really has been sort of uncommon outside of the Brooklyn trio getting DeAndre Jordan on their team.
I keep coming back to this, but maybe it's just I'm hung up on this idea that he needs to redeem his image to a great degree. But if he doesn't achieve a title, oh, how about this? Let's frame it more positively. If he wins a title in Philadelphia this year, is that viewed as a redemption for him? Like, does he change the perception of him, from fans and things of that sort? Because again, I think he's taken a major hit over the last couple of seasons, as you pointed out. Like, now he's actually actively done something to help them. And if he wins a title, do you think of Harden in a new, different way, like as a guy who's willing to make those sacrifices in order to commit to winning?
You know, he's got the MVP. He's been second a bunch, scoring two scoring titles. I should know that. Anyway, I think that so very long as player, very good player, yeah, resume is amazing. If they win a title and he's legitimately great in the playoffs, not better than Embiid, because I think Embiid's clearly better than him at this stage. You know, because that would be different. Like if they win it all and him taking less money means that PJ Tucker is good and like Maxey's really good in the playoffs, but he's just okay. You know, I think more of him still. Like he helped the team win the title by taking less money. But I don't know if I could vault him super high up. Whereas if they win the championship and Embiid's great and he's awesome and he's like, you know, 28-12 every night in the postseason, then I'm like, okay, you know, he not only helped the team by taking money, he committed to, you know, like the fat jokes are not a thing for him anymore. And fat is relative. These are stud athletes. They're still cut. But, you know, pudgier heading into the seasons, like if he actually comes in shape and commits to it and he's really good in the postseason and they win it all, which is a lot of ifs, but it sounds like that's the path he wants to be headed down based on this interview. Then, yeah, I think that has to change his perception. That would be for the first time in three seasons, basically since Chris Paul was traded for Russell Westbrook, that James Harden thought this way and talked this way. And I think that matters quite a bit.
Absolutely. Well, I don't know if there's anything else to add to that conversation. We'll have to see how it all plays out for Philadelphia. But at least this is a step in the right direction.
A step in the right direction. Everybody, thank you a ton for tuning into Locked On NBA today. Like I said, if you want more on all these guys, Locked On Lakers, we'll have stuff on Russell Westbrook, Locked On Heat, Locked On Knicks, Locked On Jazz for Donovan Mitchell, and of course, Locked On Sixers for more on James Harden. Everybody, thank you a ton for listening. Tomorrow, you can hear Jake Madison and John Corrales wax poetic on the latest and greatest around the league. Till next Monday with us, take care. See you then.